Welcome to Friendo Podcast, hosted by me, Amanda Muse. As a YouTuber, I've shared my life online for the last 8 years, and now I'm excited to learn about you. Friendo celebrates people and their stories, from interesting jobs to unique passions and curious life skills that the world should hear about. Community is everything. Let's do this. Per Google, your sense of self or identity is probably made up of your beliefs, attitudes, abilities, history, ways of behaving, personality, temperament, knowledge, opinions, and roles. Identity can be thought of as your self-definition. It's the glue that holds together all of these diverse aspects of yourself. What grounds you in your sense of identity? Is it your family, the place where you live, your religion, your community? Now, what if those things have changed or shifted dramatically throughout your life? How does that impact your sense of self? I grew up in a suburb of Montreal in a blended family while speaking two languages. And then at 19, I moved to a bigger city. And then at 21, I moved again away from family and friends. And then at 25, I moved even further away and eventually had my babies in a brand new place, very far from family. And all of these experiences impacted me and how I view myself and where I feel rooted, and also sometimes where I feel completely untethered. And then you add in some life-changing experiences like having children, and all of a sudden you gain a new hat, the mom hat, the parenting perspective, and again, you are changed. So where do you fit in now? Finding your place in a community is so important, and I love that there are virtual options now because you may not feel entirely comfortable or even safe to be yourself in your current surroundings, and finding like-minded people, even online, is so important. My friendo guest today is Layla Schrenk, a Londoner and mom of two, and today Layla and I will be discussing this feeling of other and how it pertains to your sense of identity. In her own words, she was born in a place she can't call home, living in a place where it's sometimes not acceptable for her to call home, and look like she should be living in a completely different place. She feels other and finds it interesting because the world is so globalized and there are so many people who can relate to not having a sense of belonging or feeling other at times. Welcome to the podcast, Layla.
Thank you. I'm very grateful to be here and excited.
Me too. I think this is going to be a great conversation. And I love that we were able to make it work with you being in London and me being in Ontario. It's perfect. So when you submitted your podcast application and the topic for today, I was very intrigued of this concept of identity and community and feeling other and where we sort of fit into everything. As you know, as my listeners know, I've lived in a few different places, and it's interesting, like, you know, I was born in Canada, but then when I went and lived somewhere else, I really immersed myself in that culture. I didn't come back to Canada very much. And then when I did, it was like trying to find your place again with having all of these new experiences. So that's like a very small, you know, kind of way to identify. But tell me about why you sent in your note today and how feeling other has impacted you and what that looks like in your life.
Yeah, I was born in Cape Town in South Africa. And then when I was 6 years old, my father was actually offered a job in London as a hospital. And so my immediate family moved over. And I have been here in London ever since. I went to South Africa for a family holiday, and it was about 7 years after we'd moved. And to us, we were so excited. We were like bubbling up inside that we're going home. And then when I get there, people are like, oh, how long are you staying for? When are you guys going back home? And I was like, what? I thought we just came home. So that was a shock, because I was this teenager who had all these ideas of who I was. And no, I'm from South Africa. So kind of built myself up around that. And then when I came back to London and I kind of was growing up and being my own person in the world, I realized this feels also not like home, in terms of like outwardly, people don't see this as my home, even if I do. And then when I was at uni, and you know, you meet a whole new people, a whole new bunch, and I realized also that people expected me to be from India because of the way I look, or Bangladesh, or Southeast Asia. And so they were like, oh, what languages do you speak? And I was like, English is my first language. And they're like, oh, okay. And you know, they were, I kind of had all these expectations about me. Do you go home for the holidays? And I said, dude, I go home every weekend. Like, I take my laundry home. And they were like, that's to India? And I was like, no, who said I was, you know? So it kind of also made me feel at that point that, okay, I don't actually know, like, where am I supposed to fit in? But it ended up being that I kind of gelled with people who were from London. And I think there's a really strong London vibe. I don't know if it's super multicultural and that's why, but it's just busy and people are all different, but you're still from London and you just accept it. So I think kind of that helps a lot with, that's like my main identity focal point in terms of where I'm from. I can say London and you can expect me to be from anywhere, you know, background wise, but I'm still London. So
when you say like people would assume you're from somewhere else, it's because of how you look, really, is what it comes down to. So for people that are listening, maybe tell me a little bit about how you look so that they can get an idea of why people would assume that.
Yeah. So I mean, I think I look really Indian. I think my background is majority Indian. So that's why. There's also some Malaysian sprinkled in there, Malaysian or Indonesian. I'm not sure exactly what, but there's some of that in there. And that's also why, as a child, I think I looked a lot more Malay than now. I think I look super Indian, but I think also because, you know, when you're in your head and you're just looking out at the world and listening to whatever music that you're vibing to and thinking you're in a movie, it's so different when people then come at you with, oh, but you are this, and then you're like, huh, oh, I forget, okay, yeah, I'm brown and I'm wearing a hijab or a headscarf. And so, you know, that's obviously what they're seeing of me before I open my mouth.
Did you know we've released a shop where you can support Frendo? Check out hellofrendo.com and explore. That's HelloFriendo.com, and shop mugs, shirts, stickers, hoodies, and more. We're constantly adding new goodies for you. Your purchase directly supports the show and the work involved in creating it for your ears. So thank you. Check out HelloFriendo.com. All right, back to the show.
You mentioned that you feel like you're from London and you can say that. Like, how did you get to that point where you were a teenager saying, like, there's a couple things that came out when you were saying, like, you were going home to South Africa. So I would imagine, let's go back here. I would imagine that your parents were probably like, we're going home and that's South Africa. So they were creating this, helping you create this identity with that place. First question is, are they still in London with you, and or did they go back to South Africa, or how's their relationship with that?
My father still lives here. My mother passed away when I was 16. But she did this thing whereby we'd been living here for such a long time, yet we'd walk into a store and she'd say, oh my gosh, that's £30. I wonder how many rands. Yeah, that'll be about, oh, okay, well, 300 rands. And I'm like, Mum, we're not going back. And we don't have any rands, so why are we still converting? Like, she would, I don't know if all people who, like, you know, move to other places do that, but she would always still convert and to see how much, and wow, that's a good deal. And I'm like, I don't get it. So I think in her mind, it's very much like she was still South African and, you know, going back home. And yeah, that was quite interesting. Like, I can remember sitting in the aeroplane and we were all like holding hands as we were landing, and we were like, woo-hoo, cheering so loud. People around must have been thinking, what on earth? But yeah, we were super stoked. And then I kind of realized also that I had been changed by the experience of moving. So I can't always just say that it's external factors making me feel like it's not my home, because at that point I was like, I'm so London that it's beautiful, it's colorful, there's beaches and mountain and sunshine, but it's not quite home.
And so do you still have family in South Africa?
Yes, my most of my family is still there. My mum comes from a huge family and they're most of them in South Africa. So my dad's also family is most of them in South Africa. I've got family in Australia and also the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. I've got a few aunts in the Netherlands, so that's kind of who I'm closest to, maybe also because of proximity from the UK to the Netherlands.
So do you get a chance to visit South Africa much? I know you have little ones, so it might be a little tricky.
Yeah, the last time we went, my eldest was 1 year old. I actually married somebody from South Africa as well.
Interesting.
Turns out pretty crazy because I guess a part of me still felt connection to South Africa, and we actually met online.
Oh, wow. And
yeah, it was like back when Skype had this Skype Me mode, and you can see anybody who was online in that mode. And I was like up, and I was like, okay, I'm going to see who's online in South Africa, or in Cape Town specifically. And there were two people online. I don't even remember who the other person was. I just thought, let me connect somebody from there. And I sent a message saying, hey, do you want to chat? And then we got married like years later. So
that's so, amazing. Yeah. Look at you making the internet work. Oh my. So that's so curious. I didn't realize you'd met that way, but like, you know, feeling this connection to South Africa really brought you together with your partner. That's amazing. So when you had messaged me, you said he's from a different like part of South Africa. How did he get to you in London?
Well, we actually, the first time we met was in South Africa. I went down visiting with my grandma. And then I told her, I was like, so I need to tell you about this guy. And she was like, so basically you didn't come for me. And I was like, no, I did. but yeah, he's actually Afrikaner. So he's originally, his background is German with some Dutch, I think. So yeah, it's like, I don't know, super crazy that I meet a South African and then it turns out to be somebody from the culture who that is completely different to mine.
Right.
There are a lot of similarities because his mom is like a softy, and I just always tell him that she reminds me a lot of my mum. So there's so many similarities in, I guess, the Southern hospitality kind of vibe. But it is sometimes shocking that it's that I ended up being with somebody who, especially because of the cultural and racial tensions in South Africa, we're kind of opposite sides almost, you know. And so, yeah, that's worked out pretty interesting.
Oh, wow. So do you speak Afrikaans?
I can speak Afrikaans better now than I ever could before.
Okay.
My mom, I always got told off in Afrikaans, so I knew enough to kind of know that I wasn't doing the right thing.
Yeah.
But as I'm speaking with him more, and his family's first language, his first language is Afrikaans, but you wouldn't be able to tell that the way he speaks English. So.
Okay. So coming back to this feeling of other, so, you know, you're a young little person, like six, my goodness, moving, that's a big move to do from South Africa to London. Total shift, culture shock out. I mean, a little at least, weather for sure. You immerse yourself there. What helped you, you know, as you were going through your teen years, as you were growing up, you know, I feel like when you feel other, it seems very lonely. Like it can feel like you're alone in an experience. So what is it, or how did you feel supported in finding a community and feeling like you found your place? Like what helped you along the way?
I think that my faith had a big kind of part to play in that, because apart from feeling very centered in London, I also feel quite grounded in the fact that there's so many people that share my faith around the world and also in London or wherever I am, really. And so I remember when I was at uni, I kind of met people and felt a bit, you know, when you get the questions of, okay, but where are you from? 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 Those kind of questions. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, I need to think about this because I really don't know what Layla feels inside. And I read a hadith, or like a saying, that the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, said, and he said that the earth, the whole earth, is your masjid, which is, you know, like a mosque, a place to pray. And I was like, okay, this is giving me a bit of a feeling of confidence because it means that wherever I am, like above and beyond, we're just people and we all just want to be heard for who we are, not, you know, necessarily for who the world sees us as. And so if I can pray anywhere, then I can be me anywhere, and it doesn't really matter as long as I know who I am. So I think that helped me a lot in accepting that this is who I am. I always felt like the girl who looks like she should be one way but isn't, and then from one place but isn't, living in one place but isn't. And so the question is, so who am I? So those are like two things that I've always been able to say, is that I'm Muslim and I'm from London. So that kind of gives me something to feel. In terms of community, I had a lot of people around me when I was kind of young and in school still that made me feel a sense of community in school, literally. And then after that, I think the main thing is that I have so many siblings. So it looks like a party even when it's just us. And that makes me feel like, you know, there's so many people who we are so different, but we also know each other. Like, I guess nobody else knows you because nobody else knows what you were doing at the dinner table and you're annoying and, you know, going through all your life phases and now seeing me have children. And yeah, so that's kind of my main thing. I have also found community online, which is obviously, I met my husband that way, but also in terms of like Facebook groups for breastfeeding mums, that's a place where I feel like there's a lot of like-minded people because we're all just boobing babies and we can relate to having, you know, constant night feeds. Or somebody in the beginning of lockdown, like it was as if my children didn't know what food was anymore and they just were ready for milk. So there was a lot of relating there. I also have met people in groups online that I have nothing in common with. So when I was pregnant, I had hyperemesis gravidarum, which is like, you're just super sick.
I feel scared when you say those words, because it's like, you were probably sick like every day, because that's...
It was like, It was like multiple times a day, signed off of work, just in my bed. My husband couldn't come near me because even the smell of people made me sick. Like, it was so much. But then I found this group on Facebook, as you do, and everybody was so different, like completely different walks of life from all over the world, but experiencing the same thing. So I kind of find community in that way. I think mom's group is a big way to help, especially if it's, you know,
Oh my gosh. Yes. I love how you didn't hesitate to reach out and find these groups. Cause I feel like a lot of people can feel maybe not other, but alone, right? In a lot of different phases in their life, whether, you know, early motherhood is a big one for women. I mean, it's really the reason I started everything I do online, because I remember like, I need people, you know, who are going through a thing that I'm going through and we can share. And then it evolved. But I feel like a lot of times people don't know how to take that first step to find these groups, and you can feel a little scared or a little nervous because you don't know what's going to come of it. But you got to try sometimes, because you just don't know what could come from it. And especially in times like this, when we are forced to be at home, and some of us, it's a little trickier than others with little kids, and you're just so busy all day, to find people like-minded where you can relate and feel connected. And like you said, when you know, that one Facebook group where you didn't have anything else in common, just the one thing, but like, it must feel nice to have a person you can be like, are you feeling terrible today too? Yeah, it's horrifying, you know, like, and to have like that support and that empathy from other people. It's amazing how, you know, coming back to what you were saying before about, you know, finding that grounded feeling within your family and that support. You're very fortunate to have that, because I think a lot of people sometimes don't. And then it's like, okay, well, where do I go next? The great thing you mentioned was school, how school can be so impactful in connecting us and feeling like we're part of something. And then religion, a huge one. It's interesting. Like, I have never been baptized or anything like that, but I somehow stumble into like curiosity about religion, or, you know, seeking out places of worship in times where I felt very alone. Like, I remember my first times in Vancouver, my goodness, I think Dean was gone for like 5 straight weeks. I was completely alone. I didn't know anybody. I remember just walking into a church and I was like, I looked up what the church was about. I was like, all right, I'm kind of into this. I walked in and I was like, hello. Like, I just needed human interaction, you know? So, you know, with religion, has it always been, you know, something that's really important to you? Like, were your parents very good at teaching you about that and helping be a good example for you?
Yeah. I think also the memories that I do have, even of South Africa, was the religion was kind of, it's not something that's on the side. It's very much like in your whole everyday life. So the Muslim communities in South Africa are huge and super strong. There's like masjids everywhere. Everything's halal. Like, everybody, you know, kind of knows this one, knows my granddad, oh, because of that and because of this and meeting at the mosques and kind of stuff like that. So it plays a huge part, I think, in the community there. And then when we moved here, we didn't really know anyone. And my parents obviously got talking to people. And then I was put in every Saturday. I went to like an Islamic school, which is kind of like almost like a Sunday school, you know. Mm-hmm. And I at uni joined the Islamic Society, and it's always kind of been in my life. My husband was not Muslim, and he knew that I didn't want him to like just do it for me. So I was like, okay, let's just have a time out. You do what you need to do. Do your research, because he was really interested in like learning about religions as well. And so he kind of did his own research and then said that he wants this. And so it's always been super important to me. I feel like I would never want to change somebody or somebody to change for me, because I think it's so important to know who you are. But I constantly want to change and develop and learn. So I kind of, you know, I get that it's, as long as it's personal, I think that that's great. You do what's best for you.
It's so lovely to have that personal relationship. Like, it's one of the things I really value in Dean and my partner. He grew up in a very like Catholic household and went to church all of the time. And I like, he'll tell the kids stories and I'm literally like, what's he talking about? Because my parents didn't expose me to any of that. And it's really interesting to really see and appreciate a person's personal relationship to their faith. And I respect the process, and I respect like the conversation and the dialogue he creates with the kids is just wonderful. And to allow that discussion to happen, because I always say to him, I'm like, I just want to go to church for like the community. Like, I want like the Sundays with the tea and stuff. Like, I need people, you know, I'm such an extrovert. This pandemic is killing me, but it is something. I don't think we're meant to be alone. And when you can find a place where you fit in, if it's a sport that you love doing and, or like a knitting club or whatever it is, it feels so wonderful to have people that like anchor you to the earth and you feel connected to something. I think that's such a wonderful thing. So you do have little kids, and I would imagine that, you know, your otherness may filter through at some point in how they feel, although they were born in London and like they will naturally have this connection. So have you thought about, you know, things that you're putting in place to help them feel a sense of belonging to, you know, who they are and their identity? They're very small still, but, you know, have you given that some thought?
I have. Yeah, I've given it so much thought. Even before I was pregnant and I already had like names that I'd like, I even thought about like what that does for their identity, in how they're seen in, because, you know, I don't know if you have the same dialogue there. Here in recruitment, there's a lot of talk about how a name on a CV will make you instantly judge like all the other information on that paper, which, is that right or is that wrong? So I thought so much about even that. And now that they are here and talking, and my husband is white, I am brown. And so my son, like, I put cream on his arm the other day and I didn't rub it in properly. And he was like, oh, that makes my ankle white like Papa. And then all of a sudden I was like, breathe, think, best thing to say. You know, I just don't want him to ever feel like, I don't know, like it's like he can't talk about things or like what he's saying is wrong. But then I also want to give him the best opportunity to see the world with open eyes. So I'm like, yes, Abba has white skin. And when you don't rub the cream in, it does kind of look like that. Hey, but yeah. Your skin is beautiful too, just like Papa's skin is beautiful. So I have to try to, you know, think of this way, which is why I'm saying that I feel outsmarted already and I should read books about, or more books about parenting or how to relay this information. Because we were making BLM posters, which we have on our windows, because we have rainbows on our windows, because, you know, that was for the NHS, for our National Health Service. And so we made a big BLM poster, and he's like, okay, so he knows kind of what it stands for. But then there's so much conversation around that. And even though he can talk about these things, I'm like, how much is he grasping, because he's three? But yeah, I'm trying in every way. We are learning English and Afrikaans, and we're learning British Sign Language, and we are learning Arabic. So as a family, I feel like I'm trying to show them that language is such a good place to start, because it means you can connect. And if people just want to be heard and you can understand, then it means the world is a little bit more open.
But it's like you said, it's keeping the dialogue just open, because you don't know as you're going through all the phases and creating snacks and meals 100 times a day, like where they're at and what might trigger that question of, wait, like, where do I fit into this? Right. Something as simple as putting some cream on your skin and all of a sudden that little thought comes in. You know, my kids are obviously, you know, Dean is Caucasian, as am I. So, you know, but Esme and Dean have a more olive complexion to their skin. And so there's a funny thing that will happen in our house where my son is more freckly and pale like me. And so they're like, well, Mom and Jack are team whatever. And, you know, and Dad and Esme are, and I'm like, excuse me, we just have to wear more sun, you know, more sunblock and hats. And it's like a little joke, but how quickly that little, she identifies like, I'm more like Dad. Like, that's just who I am. And I'm like, wait, like, no, you know, but it's, you don't know what's going to set off this little sense of identity in these little humans, and you got to like stay on it. But being open and allowing that conversation, even if you don't get it right, is, I think, such a wonderful thing for parents in any regard, just to be like, well, I don't really have an answer, but let's see where we're going here. Right. I always find I'm telling myself, like, Amanda, with your children, like, talk less, you know, let them do the talking. It's hard.
I think it is different for my children though, because I mean, I have my parents, even though my mum in South Africa was classed as Cape Malay, you know, in the whole apartheid split thing. Mm. I think that her family was kind of classed as Cape Malay. And that's even the area that they were in. And my father was Cape, kind of South African Indian. So I knew that growing up, that that was super different. But at the same time, they looked similar. And apart from some things in the food and the culture, I still felt very much like, there's so much mix between this in South Africa that it's normal. So I think where I'm benefiting from my siblings is that some of my siblings are half Indian and half white. So my one sister looks completely white with freckles, and my other sister kind of looks light brown. So we're all like on a spectrum. So I think that's a bonus, because then my children can see, hang on, even like mama's brothers and sisters look so different. So hopefully that's also easier for them to have those kind of grown-ups to look up to that maybe they can relate to.
Oh, and they're so lucky to have such a big family. Oh, like, it's so, are you guys quite close in proximity?
Some of us are. So we all live quite close, but my one brother lives in Sweden and my other sisters are like at university. So, but still all, we close-ish. Always have like, yeah.
That's
and
nice.
There's always like a WhatsApp conversation going on, or voice notes, or we do like check-ins, or so, yeah.
Oh, that's so good. Dean is one of six. And so he would joke and be like, well, sometimes, you know, you don't care to talk to a few of them, but then you've got a few others you can talk to. Like, you've got a selection. So I would imagine that travel is fairly important for your family. Like, we're assuming once COVID settles down and you can get back up to doing that again. But is this something that's important to you, for you to, have your children experience South Africa and what that's like, and to kind of feel a little bit like they're part of both?
Definitely. When we went to South Africa with my son when he was one, I was just so excited for him to also feel the love from like my family, but also from his dad's side, especially because I mean, the culture is different, but because everybody loves him, he's like the eldest grandson on both sides. So it's like super exciting. And, you know, I also was excited because in the beginning, my husband only spoke Afrikaans to him. And I thought being in South Africa, that would really help. But because I spend most of my time with him, he's mostly getting English out of me. So but I'd love to do, I don't know if you've seen that show called Who Do You Think You Are, where you travel kind of to a place where you kind of find your ancestry and information. And I'd love to do that. I think my travel is definitely going to take me to India. First stop is going to be India. My husband's will probably be Germany, but I am so excited. I'm like always on Skyscanner, just like looking for deals. And I'm like, Layla, get your head back in the game. You can't go anywhere, but it's still so exciting to think about.
I haven't seen that show, but I did have an opportunity to do one of those like ancestry type of things. So I didn't do the one where you're like spit into a tube. My brother did that. And so I figured we're close enough. So I got the information from him, but I did have someone go through my roots all the way back to the first person who came to Canada. And it was so curious to see like where that filtered through. And I was actually quite surprised by my reaction to it, because it was a woman who had come, and she would have been like orphaned. And it was, they're called the filles du roi, which is like daughters of the king. And so it was sort of like this concept, like we need women to come to Canada to help marry people and like have babies and populate the, you know. So, but it's so interesting, because I was like, well, here's this woman who like got on a ship and she had nothing. And I felt like this like connection to this power, you know, and I was like, this is so, but it's so curious when you just don't know the story of like how you got here. And you know, my grandparents came from here and other grandparents came from there. And you know, how do you fit into the puzzle? So I love that, you know, your kids will have a chance to experience what South Africa was like. And it's so curious, like you and your husband being both from there, but having very different lived experiences, like him growing up there, that's a completely different way we see a place and how we feel about it. And I feel kind of like a reverse to that, because it's like with my kids, they were born there. I want them to have like go back to their place of birth and experience what Malaysia's like and eat the food that I remember so fondly. So it's, you know, it's like the world is very big, but also very small at the same time. Because like you said, you pop on those sites and you find those deals and you're like, we're going to make this happen. You know, like it's not a far-fetched dream once COVID settles down, you know, caveat. So I guess a question for you would be like, so here you are, you know, you've got children, you're in the thick of it, married, you know, when it comes to how we feel and where, you know, what part of the community, how we fit into all of that, are there things that you do just for you that you enjoy spending your time? Like maybe it's self-care, maybe it's reading. What do you like to do just for Layla when the kids are asleep or you get some time for yourself?
Well, now I watch YouTube videos since I can't leave the house. So that's kind of my, and I will watch it about like anything. I've learned to do so many random things on there that it's like, it's really, really useful. But because I really like languages as well. When I was on maternity leave with my son, I did a British Sign Language course. And that's kind of how I got started in this teaching them sign language. So that was kind of the thing that I did for me. And then with lockdown and my second baby, in my kind of maternity period, I started doing a TEFL course online, so like teaching English as a foreign language. So my brother did it, and he taught in South Korea for a year, and then my other sister did it, and so like we're all just jumping on this bandwagon. So yeah, that's kind of what I do, is I just am doing languages, and now I've started on Duolingo to learn Swedish because my brother lives there, and so now my siblings are like, do not also move to Sweden and everybody's gonna leave and you know what's going on, and I'm like, the language is so easy to learn, guys, come on, learn it. And they're like, no, I'm gonna learn Spanish instead, or I'm doing this, or so that's what I'm interested in at the moment. And
I love that languages are tricky, but boy, that's a way to keep your brain like active. And I'm always trying to find things to stimulate my brain. You know, it's like always learn new things because you don't want that thing to like settle too much. I love that. And keeping yourself busy. And, you know, I think that's for people listening who have children. And I know that I remember feeling this at some point, but especially as a new mom, you can feel like you may not feel other in terms of your place of birth or where you're living, but you can lose your identity a little bit in the sense of becoming a mom, because it feels like everything is for someone else. And, you know, I say take pride in like, you want to learn languages. I love that, because it's, you're not losing yourself in this process of motherhood, because it's so easy to do that for sure. So I guess before we let you get back to life here, I'm curious, would you ever live in South Africa again?
No.
No. Okay. You're like, I am a Londoner. This is home.
Yeah. One thing I struggle with also is when I went back, it's very, the public transport is not as it is here, and I don't drive. So I'm used to tube, train, kind of bus. And there it's like, there's a bus every hour and I'm like, oh, okay. And then it's not really that safe, or, you know, so I feel like that would make me lose my independence. Because even when we go on holiday, like, if nobody's in the mood to go out somewhere and they can drive, I also have to just stay. Whereas I'm the kind of person, I'm like, no, I want to go do this and I want to see this now. Like, you know, so I think I struggle with that. Yeah. And I think the mentality of people is super different. And that's kind of how I also know I'm a Londoner.
Well, I thank you so much for chatting with me today. This was so interesting to hear your perspective on other. And I think that so many listeners will, maybe if they haven't moved around, but maybe their identity has shifted a bit and they're wearing different hats and little tips on how they can feel part of a community in ways they can go about that. So thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to the man friend portion of Friendo Podcast featuring Dean.
Dean the man friend.
Hello, man friend.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, I just noticed you don't have your cast on today.
I know, and I'm fumbling with it because it's very, very stiff and a little bit painful to move.
The thumb is free. The scarring is not so bad.
And the Advil's working, so let's carry on.
We'll move on. If you want to see a creepy photo, head to Dean's Instagram at planetdean2. I like it though. It's very like a creepy. It's a slick scar. It's going to be cool.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's really cool.
Well, I thought I would do something a little different for this podcast because I feel like Layla and I were able to really get into a different type of topic today, this sense of identity and feeling a sense of belonging. And it's so dependent on, there's just many variables, right? The sense of identity and sense of belonging. And something unique about Dean, which many of you likely know, but Dean's job being a pilot has taken him around the world and living in many places, but also kind of not living in many places. It's a little bit of this nomadic type of life because it's hotels and it's temporary living situations and it's training in countries for 3 months and then commuting and all of this. And you've also, you know, you grew up in Saskatchewan.
Right.
And then when did you leave there?
When I was about 17, 18, I left there.
Okay. So I actually, and then you jumped to the next thing is you moved to Alberta with some of your family, not all of them, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Because a lot of your older siblings had already moved out by then.
Right.
So it's funny because I didn't actually realize that you'd moved to Alberta at such a young age, just because of the way that you never really spoke about Alberta being like a home base.
Right. Yeah. Well, my father got a new job and I just happened to get a job in a place that was very near so I could continually live at home. And at first my dad and I lived in a rented house and then mom joined us and I spent, a year and a bit there and it was always kind of my home base, but I never really spent any quality time there. I mean, family time other than, when I would come home for a visit and that type of thing.
Right.
Right.
And then, you know, jump ahead a few years, you kind of lived a little bit in Alberta. Then you had a partner for a really long time and she lived on a different side of Canada. And then there was a lot of commuting even in that time, like you looking for work. And so, I mean, you lived in a car at one point. We won't get into all the specifics, but I guess.
Well, thanks for bringing that up.
You know, just a touch of trauma in there. But I guess the question I have for you is like, do you feel a sense of identity or belonging to a place?
I would say not anymore because like you mentioned before, I mean, there was the Canada commuting and getting in the car as the pilots did in the early 90s and driving from town to town, looking for a place to go and make your stand and get that foot in the door with a flying job. And you met a lot of people doing the same thing, actually, and there was not a lot of jobs to be found. So, when you did find a job, you were shacking up with other pilots. Or, as you mentioned, I lived in my car for a good portion of a year. And, you quickly learn that you're going to be very lonely if you keep longing for home because it was quite obvious in the early years that or not obvious, but it came to be known that, pilots move around a lot. Mm. It's not like you get up in the morning and you kiss your wife goodbye and you go to work for 9 o'clock because days start much earlier or later in the case may be. So yeah, I think I started to feel that way. And then it really hit home when I started to work overseas and commute from there, where I was only spending about 100 days or less a year in, you know, in Canada.
Yeah, you're definitely not like a dentist with your practice up the street and you live in the same town for 50 years.
No.
So, and this is where you and I know that we had some, I want to use the word struggles, perhaps some strong differing opinions, because when we were in Malaysia, I felt this strong sense of like home is in Canada, home is elsewhere.
Oh, I know.
And that has now naturally, now that we're back in Canada, I don't feel that anymore. And I think there were certain family members that I felt a very strong connection to that I was desperate to visit. And I felt so distant from them. They were getting older. And so I felt this like I must be home near them, because if I'm not home, I'm not part of the group or something. It was a really interesting thing. And now that I've lived in a few different places, I've realized that that sense of belonging for me is actually with my little four-person family unit here. Like,
right,
if we picked up and scooped up our dogs and our lizard and our kids and like went and lived somewhere else, I think I would be just as content.
Yeah, me too.
Ish.
Yeah.
You know, like there's definitely things where I feel definitely like rooted in Canada. I love Canada as a country. I love all different elements of it. So I love being here. I don't feel that pull to go live elsewhere at the moment. But something I definitely give a lot of thought to is that our kids were born somewhere else, and there's a part of their history that I want them to understand better. And like, I really want them to experience Malaysia as a little, you know, as like a young adult type of thing. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I definitely do. I mean, just to kind of add to what you're saying there about, you know, being, I guess what you're saying is you're kind of used to being nomadic. If you could be nomadic if you needed to. And
yeah, like I think a much, like nomad light, like, well, you definitely have got it down to a science where you're almost like you've gone the other way where you're like, I don't need this photo book, burn the photos. Like you don't care. Where I'm like, well, not to that degree, guys, but you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I still feel connected to certain things here.
Well, I think that it starts, if you want the slightly, elevated or long answer on that, is that I think when you realize, like when I was in Korea, that was the first time that I really felt connected to people of different cultures and nationalities. And a few of us, you know, we would joke like, you know, you just gave up your citizenship and you become a citizen of the world, because a lot of cool things happened when I flew overseas on the 747. And I would fly with, you know, so many nationalities, too much to mention, but we're all so different, but there's a lot of things that are the same when you meet fellow nomadic type people that, yes, they have a family back home and they love them and they have a life there, but when you're away so long, you know, you really tend to appreciate things and people that maybe you wouldn't appreciate. Like you make fast friends, just like being expatriate in Malaysia. You know, you're in the same position and you say like, yeah, let's be friends. And it really melts away this element of social control where, you know, I'm very non-judgmental about people as far as anything from, you know, their customs, nationalities, disabilities, or abilities. I really don't care. And because I know that it's such a dim view of the world to you know, criticize somebody or to ostracize somebody for what they believe or the color of their skin or you know, or the like, or their financial status or whatever. So I find that a very relaxing thing, because like you said, I could get up and with my little nomadic tribe here and lizards and fish and go anywhere and make friends anywhere. And the people that, you know, when you go to a place, you know, people are tend to be like, she was saying that, you know, like, where are you from? People are always into this, where are you from kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I guess because they're nervous, you know, they don't like transient people, or people are nervous about transient people. But you'll also find the people that are the same as you and appreciate the diversity in you just as you do in them. And that's the richest type of relationship. So to answer your question, I not only wish that they, you know, as me and Jack experience that, is that I really actively, you know, I want to pursue a situation where they are in that environment.
Because like you said, there's so much that opened my eyes when I experienced something other than what I knew and was accustomed to. It was like, I want to use the word empathy for just, but it's not even just that. It's such a bigger word. It's like appreciating that people come from so many different walks of life. You just said it perfectly, and how much that changes just how you embrace other people.
Right.
You know, you tend to ask better questions when you meet people. And I don't know, it's just, it's hard even for me to articulate those feelings, but yeah. I'm like you, I want them to experience all of those things so that they just have a better lens to look at the world through, you know? So I guess yeah. The next question would be, you know, and this is something we talked about in the episode, is like, what is it that tethers you to the earth? Like, what is it that grounds you and makes you feel part of something?
You mean like?
Like, is it family? Is it your faith? Is it, you know, I mean, you don't really tap into community as much. Like you kind of do, you kind of don't. I don't know. Like, what, you know what it is for you? Like, I know for me, it's finding people. So like when I land in a spot, I want to find either, like now it's harder with kids, but like I had a hobby when I lived in Vancouver and I found people through that. And then I found other moms when I landed here in Ontario who had kids around the same age, and pursuing hobbies to keep myself connected to others.
Yeah. Geez. Okay. Things that keep me grounded. I think it's kind of like, I would say what makes me feel comfortable in a place is knowing that I am self-sufficient and that I can survive anywhere.
Mm.
And therefore, I mean, I don't.
It's almost like a confidence or something. Well, in yourself.
You know, there's this thing where I started looking into, you know, this, you know, when you feel anxiety, there's a thing called anchoring, you know, that they talk about, psychologists talk about, and, you know, you control your breathing and then you name things around you and then certain sounds you hear kind of puts you into I'm here kind of thing. And I always really like that because no matter where you are, you can just kind of feel like you belong there because you really do.
Yes.
You know, I said to you it's not a confidence thing, but I remember when
I know where you're going with this. It was definitely a confidence thing. Keep going.
I don't remember what city we were in or where we were, but we were going to go into a store to look. Was it the Coach?
It was Vancouver.
Oh,
it was Banana Republic.
Oh my God.
Which is
was
so
it?
I thought ridiculous. It was something like it wasn't even,
the Coach, but
it was
store like, or something.
It was kind of fancy in Vancouver anyway.
So, you know, we're not rich, but we've had, especially when I was flying overseas, like we had no shortage of money. And that was a really good time. And it helped us launch ourselves into the life we have now. But what I realize is, you know what? And this is like from shopping in Asia at any store, your money's green, you know, like, let's say, for Asia, China or Korea, or mostly China, I guess, and Malaysia, they have the little cat with the arm that goes back and forth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Prosperity is like, I don't want to say it's like a religion, but in a way it is. And prosperity for in Asia means that, you know, money flows. The person selling that purse doesn't care where you're from, where you're sleeping tonight. They don't care if you're on the street. Mm-hmm. The thing is that they have a product for you. They welcome you in to have a look at it. And if you want to buy it, you buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And your money is just as green as any movie star or, you know, CEO of a big company. And you have a right to be there if you want to be there. You are a patron. And this is the thing with life is that it doesn't matter. Like, you know, I love those commercials where, you know, those Instagram things where they put on, and it's like shows what really rich people look like, and they're dressed like in a t-shirt and all this stuff, and what really poor people look like, and they drive like a seven series BMW and are dressed up. It's just a lie. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing to make you feel more detached from a place than comparing yourself to people in that environment, because I don't want to be the same as everybody else. Mm-hmm. But being the same as everybody else is a part of like social control. You know, people that live in one place that are quite provincial, that don't go anywhere really, they like it how it is, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But I'm not like that. Mm-hmm. I've been in the slums in Chennai, you know, when I turned 40 there, and I was invited by this nice Indian family to go to their home and have a meal. And I remember going into this neighborhood and I was like, oh my God, there's no power at all. And we're driving through the far reaches of Chennai. There's, you know, a few fires here and there. And then walking on a board through the mud to their dirt floor home. And actually, it was quite an enjoyable time. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just...
Because what I'm hearing you say, and what I gathered from this conversation as well, is like, I think a lot of it, whether it's you're changing, you know, your place where you live, or you're changing careers, or you're changing your faith, or you're changing your role as like a mother or parent or whatnot, I think that it is the confidence that also allows you to feel like you belong, because you believe that you do.
Well, you bring up a really good subject, and you know, I don't want to delve into religion because it's a really personal matter, but
yes,
you know, this is something we always talked about as well, or you've mentioned to me, I think, because you know, I was brought up Catholic and you were kind of a non-denominational type person, and mm-hmm. and there's many religions in the world, and I think my father told me that one time, is that you know, my dad's really he's Catholic, but he's very, very he's very, very knowledgeable about you know, theology and different religions. And, you know, he talked something about it, but I remember, I think it was at my grandmother's funeral, I believe. There was a priest that we knew, and we got into this, you know, one of these conversations that are, you know, around the table, and everybody's kind of left, and we started talking about religion, and this priest says, he goes, make no mistake, God's not in any church. That's community. Religion is about community and people coming together as a community and believing as a community and supporting each other. But you can believe in God walking down the street in the middle of the desert on a raft in the middle of the ocean, if that's what you want to believe. And you know, because we didn't see that, or I didn't see that. I won't talk about what you saw, but when I was working in overseas, you know, I flew with Hindi, Muslim, Catholic, Protestant, you know, all different people from different walks of life. And they never did anything to me, and I never offended them. And I'm very happy to let people do what they wish to do. And when you came back here in the Western media, I mean, we came back in the midst of, well, it was always going on, but you know, you hear a lot about a lot of conflicts and wars, mm-hmm. and all the stuff that's going on. It's just like, all right, step off it. Mm-hmm. I mean, what are we arguing about? You're arguing because I can't believe in this and you want me to believe in that, mm-hmm. or you own this and I don't own that. And after a while, you just kind of go, you know what? So in a way, to me, belonging somewhere is a belief that I can belong and find people that I get along with and can become friends with anywhere, mm-hmm. anywhere. And when you believe that, it's a terribly comforting feeling, because, you know, I have no tolerance for racial indifference or religious indifference, and I won't tolerate my kids doing that. And mm-hmm. therefore I hope other parents are like that. Mm-hmm. And it's good to accept people that are different, mm-hmm. into your environment. It opens your mind to the world that we live in, because if you see those pictures from space, it's just like a big blue ball.
Oh, totally.
Sitting out here, and what are we doing?
And the more
scrapping for nothing.
The more that, you know, because I know that confidence, it sounds so easy, like you just get confident, but like the more that people are accepting, the less that people will feel other because they won't be made to feel other. Right. So I enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, that was nice. Wow. It's kind of nice to talk about that stuff, but I like this podcast. It really opened up a lot of memories for me, and geez, it's a good one. It's a good one.
Yeah. Well, thank you for listening, everyone. We appreciate you being here, and we'll catch you next week with a brand new episode.
Thank you.
Friendo Podcast is produced and hosted by me, Amanda Muse. Music on this episode is written by Chris Bevins and Mike Payne, performed and produced by MP Real Glow. If you'd like to help support the growth of Friendo Podcast, you can do so by leaving a positive review, sharing the podcast with your friends and community, and supporting the shop at HelloFriendo.com. Find us on Instagram at ShopHelloFriendo. And thank you for listening. And remember, be your own bird.